As I was listening to the introductory speech, I was wondering whether I answered that description. Narayan Desai is an artist. And you know, artists sometimes create images for themselves. So he has created an image of Dada Dharmadhikari, which is not realistic. My only qualification is that I am an all-rounder. My ignorance of all subjects is equal. So I have been asked to wind up the proceedings of this seminar, because I am more or less long-winded. As I was listening to these discussions in the morning, I was wondering what I could say. I was reminded of a bishop, a village preacher, who once blundered into a big city, a metropolis, and he was asked to address a gathering of learned people. So the poor man said, "I propose to give you a dose of the milk of human kindness." A member of the audience stood up and commented, "Condensed, I hope." So I shall be as brief as I can with my long tongue. My heart goes out to you, because you are striving to join what has been man's eternal quest. Eternal and endless. That's the beauty of it. It's a glorious as well as a romantic adventure. But we have to launch on it with a basic faith, a faith which admits of no argument, which is beyond all logic. Our faith in absolute goodness. You may paraphrase it as God or soul or anything, but it is goodness, and this faith in goodness means that there can be in this world many things that are absolutely good. That is 100% good. But that there can be no evil which is unmixed. There can be no darkness unless light makes it visible. So it is goodness that is basic and that illuminates evil, even badness. That is a priori. That is the faith about which I shall give no argument. And this basic faith in man finds in his passion, which afterwards translates itself into compassion, his striving, his eternal craving for kinship. man wants to amplify himself, to augment, to become wider, greater, better, and more beautiful. But this longing for kinship has ended in the attempt at alienation. We seem to have lost our way because we have been laboring under the delusion that good fences make good neighbors. Sometimes our attempts have ended in Robinson Crusoe's finding their Fridays. The whole attempt seems to be to have gone awry. And instead of putting the world together, we are attempting to increase the area of our enclosures. Yesterday we were told by Narayan Desai that we belong to the third world. I was reminded of two books, one by that controversial writer, Wendell Willkie. He said, we will have either one world or no world. And I'm afraid we are going headlong in the direction of no world. Then there is another beautiful book, autobiographical, by Pearl Buck, which she has called My Several Worlds. It seems to me that all our cultural institutions, all our cultural activities, and scientific discoveries are putting the world to pieces. There is global fragmentation in all walks of life, which we have miscalled specialization. In my school days, I remember an incident. Our teacher, he was an extraordinarily intelligent man, once asked the class, who were those four men who saw an elephant and described it, each in his different manner, in his own manner. Some said the elephant was like a rope, others said it was like a wall, and then like a fan. They gave various descriptions of an elephant. The teacher asked, who were these people? Who were these men? The traditional answer was given by the majority of the students. They were blind. But then over there was one extraordinary intelligent boy. He stood up. He said, sir, I have a different answer to give. What is it? They were specialists. Who never saw the whole elephant. So I don't know what non-violence is. Non-violence is a mere shibboleth. What I understand is, holism, modern holism, with the W substituted by an apostrophe. To look at the whole of life. Fortunately for us, this world is a globe. And even in East and West are astronomical fictions. They have been created by us for convenience. But since they are so much in vogue, I shall also use them for the sake of convenience. Was Benjamin Disraeli, if I remember right, who said there were two nations in London, the patricians and the plebeians, the privileged people and the common people. So this dichotomy exists everywhere. And what we should attempt at is that the affluent nations also are our neighbors. I have often wondered why all prophets have insisted that we should love our neighbor. I want to tell you, I have found it very, very difficult. The most difficult thing in the world is to love your neighbor. You can love all mankind except your neighbor. Dr. Johnson once said, I can love all men except an American. And if you ask an American, he'll say, I can love the whole of mankind except a Negro, a black American. That is why prophets have always insisted. They may have insisted 2,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago, I don't mind, because science has given us an era, created an era in which space and time have lost their significance. They do not mean much nowadays, but they have been constantly asking us to love our neighbor. It was perhaps Chesterton who said, he is as strange as the star, as sudden as the rain. And it is difficult to love your neighbor because he may be anybody. And because he is anybody, he is everybody. He is the specimen of humanity given to you. And if I were to use philosophical terms, he is for you the symbol of humanity. Vinoba was using several Sanskrit words yesterday. Symbol of humanity, manavata ka sagunaru. The embodiment of humanity. So we in Asia, and we in India particularly, can love the whole world, all humanity, except Pakistan and the Chinese. Because we have been laboring under the delusion that strong fences make good neighbors. And we have been guarding our fences. That is why non-violence has remained a concept. And if any principle which is useful in life, which is perhaps the stuff of life, is converted into a theory or a concept, it becomes a cause of strife and conflict between two people who use the same concept. So our religions have erected fences. Our cultures have erected fences. There is no cultural osmosis. Though some sort of standardization and Esperantoism has come with science and technology. It has come in our architecture, in our modes of dress, in our manners and behavior, but it's only skin deep, as is our love of God. I have often told a story related by Bertrand Russell. Several nuns were living in a cloister. And all those nuns had skin diseases, scabies and other skin diseases. So the doctor who examined them said, they should not bathe with clothes on. Why do you bathe with clothes on? No man sees you. You have closed bathrooms. So one of the most devout nuns said, yes, you are right, no man sees us, but there is God. Think not because no man sees, God does not see also. So the doctor said, so your God can penetrate through a stone wall, but not through your clothes. Organized religion has lost its God, and organized philosophy has lost its soul. And that is why they have proved the undoing of human camaraderie, fellowship. Last evening, beloved, I was playing with words. This word kindred comes from kind. Man has been seeking his kind. So kindness, kinship, all these words come from the same root. Man's quest for amplification. The attempt of the I to identify itself with the Tao. This they call spirituality, which is often miscalled spiritualism. spiritualism is full of ghosts. Spirituality and objectivity, they are allied. So we are seeking for affinity. Our advance should be in the direction of approach. The approach of all these worlds towards one another. This is real advance. Religion, organized religion, is one impediment. And organization man is the very incarnation of the devil. Institutionalism and organization have usurped the place of relationship. Somebody asked in the morning, was perhaps Narayan, and he accepted the word. He said, we want a familial society. But someone said, don't say familial society. Some other word was perhaps much in vogue. So it was accepted. But there is all the difference in the world between a family and an institution. A family is based on relationship, which cannot be accepted or resigned at will. And an institution has membership. Membership can be accepted, membership can be resigned, and a member can be dismissed also. So progress means an advance from membership towards relationship. From an institutional social order towards a familistic, fraternal social order. Our relationship will be voluntary, but all the more permanent because it is voluntary. Because we have put all our heart, our strength and our soul into it. Because there is spontaneity, which philosophers have called passion. And living together is the result of compassion, which people have called sympathy also. See, sympathy, feeling together. Perhaps the very word society has come from the same root as the word sameness. So this sameness has to be developed. This has been man's eternal quest, as I told you. But the developed countries and the undeveloped countries, as the terms go, are both suffering from different kinds of maladies. We, the undeveloped countries, are suffering from privation, from want, from scarcity, from hunger and penury, chill penury. With some poet sang, penury which chills the genial current of the soul. And on that side, on the other side, in the opulent nations, you have set it, serve it. They have been overwhelmed by an unprecedented accumulation of worldly goods, which is very different from secular happiness. Secularism is not materialism in the common sense in which it is understood nowadays, an illegitimately narrowed down sense. So what we have to plumb for is to cure the affluent as well as the poor nations of their maladies. I didn't tell you that an inflated belly, a pot belly, and a deflated belly, a hollow belly, are both very bad conditions for developing human values of any kind. So in this country, I know only India. I have never been outside India because, as Toynbee said, India seems to be the whole world plays at close quarters. So much diversity of color, creed, costume. Perhaps there is nowhere else in the world. So if we are able to put India together, to put all the pieces, all the splinters together, perhaps we may succeed in putting the whole world together, joining the pieces. Now what is our state of things in here? What's the reality? The reality is that we are longing for the affluence and are envious of the opulence of the developed countries. So there is this craving, irrepressible craving, among people who are poor, suffering from want. They want to mimic. This mimicry is commonly known as snobbery. Playing the mimic. And mimicry is not real life. It is life at second hand. Spurious, vicarious. We have got certain human values which we want to preserve. But they cannot be preserved either in affluence or in poverty. So we have to give these undeveloped nations an optimum measure of worldly happiness. We seem to have forgotten that poverty is not austerity or simplicity. Simplicity is consistent with cultural sublimity. But it is poverty is inconsistent. It is detrimental to all cultural development. There can be no non-violence in a country which has been emasculated. And India is an emasculated nation. Living in constant strain and fear. Fear of whom? Of every blessed guide. Fear of Pakistan. Do you know that this country has never been invaded by any great nation? And do you also know that before our two wars with Pakistan, this country has never been able to boast of a single victory in a single war? I know bravery means the constant risk to life. The soldier is honored not because he kills, but because he faces death with every moment that passes. That is the spirit of adventure. So you can train a man in fearlessness. At the time of natural calamities, flood, cyclones, hurricanes, earthquakes. But the fact still remains that man's prowess, his valiance on the battlefield, is of a different kind. So in an emasculated nation, armaments have a peculiar charm. And we Indians envy the nations who are armed from head to foot, armed to the teeth, as they say. Because we have never possessed that valor. Divakarji said, we want non-violence of the brave. But the armed man is not always brave. That is another delusion under which we have been laboring. What chance have small countries against big countries? What chance have we undeveloped nations against those nations who have nuclear weapons? I am reminded of a very interesting incident. Vinoba was on his Padayatra, on his trek in Assam. A clown, a rustic, a poor peasant once came supplicantly and implored Vinoba to supply him with an atom bomb. He thought an atom bomb must be of the size of a tennis ball. Vinoba asked, "What do you want an atom bomb for, why?" He said, "There are several bears and these wild boars and tigers. The whole area is infested with these. So if you give me an atom bomb, I shall conveniently exterminate this pernicious species." No, I said, "Well, you can kill a tiger with a gun, with a sword, with an axe. Why do you want an atom bomb?" Then the man asked, because he was unlettered, he asked a very intelligent question. then why was the attack made? And Minerva answered, it was made to kill man. And he said, I can kill a man with my nails, with my penknife, with my knitting needle. So, friends, man is the most ferocious animal under the sun. He is not only carnivorous, he is omnivorous. All these nuclear armaments were made, have been invented to create and to kill an animal who is the frailest in the creation of God. So friends, man is man's greatest enemy. And especially that man with whom, whose interest and our interest is common. There is a conflict of interests which the revolutionary describes to us in season and out of season. These interests clash. That is why neighbors can never love one another. So in India, you will have to train your non-violent, soldiers, because that is the language we have been using. The language of the battlefield is the most popular. So this soldier of non-violence will have to be trained in unarmed valor. Valiance that does not discard or shun arms, but that does not depend upon arms. This craving and dependence on the soldier, it is the soldier who is the keeper of the citizen. The citizen's freedom is protected by the soldier. And I need tell you that all protected freedom is counterfeit freedom. Freedom that has no substance. So the common citizen of India and of every tiny country who cannot hold their own in military power against a big nation, organized nation, will have to discard, I wouldn't say discard, say cast away the fear of armaments. That is non-violence. Non-violence in the present context. We overcome the fear of armaments, the fear of the soul. And so long as we have not been able to do this, take it for my word, our non-violence will be only a copybook maxim, just as it has been in my life up to this day. Therefore, I came to you to talk to you, not only with a sense of diffidence, but trepidation. I know I'm not competent. But even the incompetent have the right to tell the truth. And I'm telling you God's honest truth. Unless you can evolve, unless you can train, the average Indian, the common Indian, to overcome the fear of the soul and subservience to the throne, and obeisance to the money bag, you can't have non-violence. All peaceful means are not non-violent. If my son threatens to shoot himself if I don't yield to his demand, is he non-violent? There are certain methods which are seemingly non-violent, but actually more violent than armed rebellion, armed resistance. So non-violent is as much a matter of the heart as a matter of the intellect. That is what we want to cultivate. Someone asked in the morning, how is love to be cultivated? If love is something to be cultivated, it's no longer love. Friend, love is the stuff of which life is made. Love is only another word for life. Man cannot live without love. You can cultivate a friend, cultivate friendship, fellowship. But friendship, fellowship is also spontaneous. You cannot live with the other, without the other. But so long as the other is the other, you are afraid of him. So you have to get rid of this otherness between the I and the thou. This is what I understand by spirituality. Cut this distance. And this is the resolution of the conflict. There are two ways of resolving a conflict. The way of Alexander and the way of the common intelligent man. Because Alexander could not untie the Gordian knot, he cut it. So the knot was cut along with the cloth. The bath water was thrown along with the baby. That's the way of the Gordian knot. If your son is suffering from headache, the doctor advises you to cut off the head. So there will be neither head nor headache. And people say the violent method is the shortest method. It is the shortest, but the most catastrophic. a devilish method. So friends, I wish you Godspeed in what you have undertaken to do. Your success may not be tangible. Failures are sometimes greater incentive, stimulants to greater effort. If you have the real revolutionary spirit in you, failures need not mean defeat. I began with Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe, and I shall conclude with the words of Daniel Defoe. He once wrote, "Though I don't like the crew, I shall not sink the ship." On the other hand, in moments of crisis, I shall try to save it at the risk of my life. Because you see, we are sailing on the same craft, and we must swim or sink together. That's the way of non-violence.